All right, so we are continuing with letter four. Very exciting. Two quick notes before we start. Number one, I'm going to make a conscious effort to speak slower for this year. Maybe it'll be easier to understand, but it's also a good skill for me to be able to practice. So if you notice me, I have this dream that one day I'll just walk into a shir that I'm giving with a stop sign and just give it to somebody who's like sitting in the shir and ask them, if I'm going too fast, just hold up the stop sign and then I'm not going to slow down. But I don't have a stop sign with me, so if I'm going too fast, give me a little signal and then I can slow down and it'll be good for me to practice. That's one. Second thing was, we said this at the beginning of the series also, I want to reiterate, no pressure for anybody who's not enjoying. This is for you, not for me. So if you want to do something else with this time, as long as you're learning, that's great. I won't be insulted, so just for you guys to have that on your mind. But let's go. I'm having a great time going through these letters. Hopefully it's beneficial for you guys also. I just want to encourage, if you're following and you're getting into the ideas, try to take a chance to look at the letters themselves. One of Hirsch's big points, actually, historically, was the reason he wrote, everything that he wrote was basically in German. And the reason he wrote Dafka in German, and that was really a big issue that was going on at his time, should you use the vernacular, or should you stick with what was known as the Jewish language, either Yiddish, maybe Hebrew, probably Yiddish, was he felt that our audience, the rest of the Jewish people, are being so taken in by Reform and by the offerings of secular culture, which is all in this highbrow, very impressive German. So he felt that we should be able to offer something in just as attractive ways, just as attractive terms. And he felt that presenting Judaism in a high level German would make it more attractive and show that we're just as intellectually strong as whatever else you see in the outside world is also. So if you get a chance to read some of the letters, and obviously not in the original German, but in the English, it's very, very nice. There's a lot of really memorable phrases, terms, or some nice lines and paragraphs. So if you get a chance to read through the actual letter, that would be great if you can take advantage of that. So to pick up where we left off, we said we're going through a progression right now, letter by letter. We said we wanted to learn about the Jews. In order to learn about the Jews, we must learn about history. In order to learn about history, we need to learn about mankind, or history is the path that mankind takes towards redemption, to fulfill their destiny. And to learn about mankind, we must first learn about the world that he inhabits. So if you remember last week, we spoke all about the world, and we came up with, one yesod in the way that Hashem created the world. We spoke about, two main makoros there. First was who was calling on, was number one, just reading Bereishis with an open eye, and showing that the 6 days of creation, the first six, were set up as pairs. Day one was paired with day four. Day two was completed by day five. And day three was finished off by day six. And then man comes into the picture. And we really wanted to know, how does mankind get involved with all this? And we also had that Mishnah in the fifth parak of Avos, the very beginning of the fifth parak, which said the idea that Hashem created the world with 10 ma'amar instead of one. And we said that showed this idea of one entity, or one big unit made up of a bunch of interconnected parts. The idea that the entire world is made up of ecosystems and food chains, and every single thing has a place and everything works together. Everything takes in order to give is one of the phrases that our first uses. All seemed very, very nice, but that left us with a huge question. Mankind doesn't seem to fit the pattern. Humanity, right, Homo sapiens, don't seem to fit in to that overall food web, food cycle, ecosystem. They're not a necessary part of really any part of the world. So what are we supposed to be doing here? So letter four, fourth letter, is all about man. What's our job? What's our role? What are we doing here? So he says, you can answer this question one of two ways. And these are two ways that he's been speaking about really throughout this entire process. Before we get that, it's a quick point. If you were like an elementary school teacher and you were trying to teach the third letter, this idea about the world, how would you introduce that class? If you wanted to illustrate this idea that everything is interconnected and there are some systems that are built where every single piece is needed, and if you take out one piece, the entire thing falls apart. There'd be some cool creative way you'd introduce that idea.
Jenga.
Okay, Jenga's a lot of fun. That's a cool one. You know, they have giant Jenga, where instead of just like small, they have like much bigger size. And the tower would be greater, massive. Other ideas?
I was thinking Django.
Django also, interesting. Anybody know what a Rube Goldberg machine is?
What?
A Rube Goldberg machine. Nobody's heard of it. Oh man, sorry you guys, you have homework to do on YouTube. Just type in the Rube Goldberg machine. If you really want to see something incredible, pull up the band OK Go. Okay, the band OK Go. Basically, they come out with songs, and I guess the songs are okay. But the main chat of OK Go is that their music videos for the songs are unbelievable, and they're basically all huge Rube Goldberg machines. A Rube Goldberg machine is usually, I guess, classically defined as doing a very, very simple task in the most complex way possible, with as many steps as you can possibly like get in there. So you want to, let's say, crack an egg. So if you want to crack an egg, that could either be like, take the egg, boom, and then you're done. Or it could be like, first you get a hammer, and there's a saw, and there's a tire involved, and a brick needs to swing from here to there. It's like the entire room would be involved in cracking this egg, and it goes through 30 steps, and eventually you crack the egg. So they're very, very cool to watch. Usually very intricate, very, very creative. And in those setups, in those machines, if you take out one of those parts, the entire thing is just not going to work. You're not going to end up with a cracked egg if one piece is really just a tiny bit off. So either, if I was feeling really creative, I'd have my class build a golden machine. I'd just ask them, like, hey guys, how would you crack an egg? They'd say, I don't know, just knock it on the side of the bowl, and then they say, well, no, we're going to do a little bit more fun. Either we'd actually build a Rube Goldberg machine, or I think we'd just watch a couple of really cool ones if I was in a cool school with a smart board. And then once we had that idea, we'd be able to get into this idea that really the world is one huge, massive Rube Goldberg machine, where every single part interacts with each other, every single part is needed for everything else, and if you take out one part, the entire machine, the entire world falls apart. There's something to think about. So our question now is, how does man fit into this? So our verse says we have two ways of answering that question. You can look at the Torah and see what the Torah says. The Torah, the point of the Torah, is the guidebook to the world, is our guidebook to see how we're supposed to be approaching life. Or you can just think about the world, look back at the world and try to see, is there something that I can glean from the way the world was set up that would answer that question? So if you're just thinking logically while you're looking at the world, you'd be able to say, every single other piece of this system has some sort of interaction with everything else and is needed for everything else. Probably, I'm not an exception, mankind is not meant to be an exception to that rule, but is meant to bring himself in to that same system. If he does that, who's he emulating? Who is man really modeling himself off of? If he chooses to bring himself into the world, he's modeling God. Right? When God created the world, he wasn't forced into doing that. He wasn't, nobody was twisting his arm. He wasn't needed to create the world. He chose to do it of his own free will. He brought something into existence. He facilitated something else out of his own free will, out of a will to give. So if mankind chooses, I'm not needed for the system, but I'm choosing to get involved, mankind is emulating God. That's pretty cool, because we know if you're reading through Bereishis and you're talking about the creation of man, what does Hashem say? How does he describe man in his original, I guess, thought process? That's the command he gives to man, even before man's created. How is he's talking, right, Nasa Adam? What does he say? How does he describe that? Bitzal, right, Bitzal meaning keep Musainu. I want to create man in a way where he'll imitate me, he'll look like me, obviously not physically, he'll be modeled after what I did. What do we know about God so far? The only thing we know, Rav David Foreman likes to talk about this also, the only thing we know about God in the book so far is that he is a creator. He's somebody who went out of his way for no reason. He wasn't forced to do anything. He volunteered himself to get involved in being made to others to create the world. If we're saying mankind or humanity is based on a model of God, what do we expect man to do? Of his own free will, to get involved in the world. When Foreman goes off on a creation idea and he says if God is a creator, mankind's a creator also, we're taking it a little bit of a different way. Instead of focusing on the creative aspect, we're focusing on the motivation. Right? God was free-willed in him getting involved in the world. So too, it must be mankind is meant to get involved in the world. He's not meant to be some ascetic in a corner somewhere. He needs to be involved in the world, but of his own free will. He's not forced. He's not driven by instinct. He's bringing himself in to the system that everything else in the world is forced into. That's this idea of Nidamos La'ashem. Refers to a great line here. If we accept this premise, that means that everything bestowed upon you, mind, your intellectual capabilities, body, your physical capabilities, your fellow man, right? All of your social relationships, everybody that you know, the family you were born into, everything like that, material goods, money, house, and everything you have access to, other creatures, right? Other animals, really other people also,
talents, the talents that you were born with, and every single power, all are merely means to action. And he finds that in the phrase, La'ovda u'lishomra. Right, as much as part of the command that Hashem gave to Adam was, but La'ovda u'lishomra, the command that Hashem gave to Adam, I'm placing you in the garden, and I want you to be involved in this world, mitzad the positive, and also mitzad the negative. Make sure things are growing and developing, and also make sure that nothing is getting wrecked. Those are the two jobs that we have, and Hashem wants us to volunteer ourselves to get involved in that. The earth was not created as a gift to you, Refer says. You have been given to the earth. Again, we're not talking Jewish right now, we're talking humanity. This is a universalist idea. We haven't even gotten to Judaism yet. The role of mankind was to give back to the earth and everything inhabiting the earth. We're meant to bring ourselves into the system. We're sympathetic, right? This is actually a cool thing. If you log on to TED.com right now, one of the trending talks, and I think it was given about a week ago, was by a woman named Kate Darling, who's been doing a lot of research on human interaction with robots. And she pointed out, this is the summary, I didn't get a chance to watch the talk yet, but she pointed out that apparently, if a human is watching a robot, and the robot either trips, falls, is getting abused, is getting hit and smacked and stuff, that triggers our feelings of empathy that are hardwired into the human brain. This is true about robots, which seems ridiculous, but not like the humanoid robots, just random robots. It's true about animals. The reverse one's even extended to like plants and flowers. He says if you're walking through nature and you see a flower blooming, you're going to feel happy. If you see a flower dying, that's going to get you down a little bit. We have this hardwired into our brains, this sense of empathy for all of creation. Obviously, that's not forcing us into doing anything, but it gives us a kick, it gives us a motivation, and it can help us realize this is what we're meant to be doing. We're meant to be building up all of creation as opposed to either avoiding the rest of creation or definitely not taking from creation without giving back, without being involved in a positive way. The reason Nasa Benishma, right, that's meant to be the big deal about our becoming a nation. The reason that was such a significant moment, Refer says, is because what we did with that declaration, right, the Medrash says that was Hashem responded, who revealed the secret of the Malachim? Who revealed the secret of the angels to my people? Who told them that this is what Malachim say? What does that mean? Refer says this is exactly our idea. Malachim and really everything else in the world are forced into doing the Ratzon Hashem. They don't really have a choice in the matter, they just do it. When we said Nasa V'Nishma, we committed ourselves of our own free will, our own volition, to say, Hashem, whatever you want us to do, we're going to do. We're bringing ourselves into the system that you set up. And Hashem said, wow, that's amazing. That's what Malachim do. But they didn't have the choice. You guys are choosing to do that? That's amazing. That's exactly what I was looking for. So Hashem set up a system. He created us theoretically outside the system. And what he asks of us to do, what he asks of mankind to do, is bring ourselves into the world, you can say, as the stewards, as the managers of the world. We spoke about a few letters ago, this is, I think, during Elul. We spoke about Shabbos as a reminder that we're managers, not CEOs, that we have the second highest position on the food chain of the entire world, but we're the ones who are supposed to be managing God's world, we're not the ones in charge of the world ourselves. Seems to be a related idea. We should see ourselves as managers and make sure we're getting involved in a positive way to keep things running, to bring the world to the end goal that Hashem created it for. So let's ask the question now. After we have this introduction, and again, where are we getting these ideas from? This is our first reading of the creation story. Right, so if anybody asks you why do we have gracious, you can answer them in the first Rashi, or you can answer them with, it's great to have mitzvos, but if you don't know any of the background, you don't know why humanity is in the world, you don't know what the overall end goal for the world was in the first place, then you're not gonna be able to appreciate anything. Reading the creation story, according to our first, is meant to give us an insight into our role in the first place. What is mankind doing in the world? So in our first letter, we had a bunch of questions. The first two were, I don't think Judaism is getting me to either to the purpose of life, which is either making a lot of money or self-perfection. So first, he doesn't directly address this, but he says, if we're looking back, both of those definitions, making a lot of money and personal perfection, are totally way off base. If we're talking about the broad scale goal for humanity, what does it mean to actually fulfill your purpose? The point is what we give, not what we get. Everything that we have, and just first the money idea, everything that we have is meant to be a means to an end, not an end unto itself. That's going to be an idea which repeats itself a lot. Everything we have, the things that we do, the money that we acquire, are means to an end, not an end to itself. Let me put out a question. What's the next step for most people post yeshiva? Where are most people headed? They're going, okay, Lapdavka. But yeah, you're right, they're going to YU. So they're going to college. Why are they going to college? They want to get an education. Why do they want an education? Why do they want a job?
Support family.
Okay, so you skipped a step.
Make money.
To make money. Why do they want to make money? This is the big question. So good. Jonathan's already thinking a step ahead to make money. So they want to make money so they can support a family. That's very important. Why else do they want to make money? It could be. At some point, if you keep asking this question, someone's going to say, because I want a house. Well, why do you want to buy a house? So that I can be secure. That's great. Be secure is a good dead end. Let's say the next guy says, why do you want to make money? So I can buy a nice new car. Well, why do you want a nice new car? Because buying the new car is going to make me happy. Your old car was just as, like, your old car still works. Your old car is fine. It's the buying of the new car which is going to make you happy. I want season tickets to the Yankees. Why are you going to do that? Because it's going to make me happy. Depending on if you keep asking this question of, you told me this, well, why do you need that? Why do you want that? And you keep going. If it eventually tracks back to, well, basically, kata, because this, and you don't have anything more, then you've reached your end and you're done with the means. So we said, what are the means in this question? The means was going to college, getting an education, getting a job. Those three were means. If the end is because I want to make money and you don't get past that, that's a problem, the verse says. The whole point of making money is not meant to stop there. It needs to be. There's another goal in mind after that. So the means needs to continue. I need money. Why do you need money? So that I can. If the end is support a family, that's fantastic. If the end is to support institutions in my community which are worthwhile, building schools, building shoals, building hospitals, then that's great. That's a good way to use the money that you can give them. But if the end itself is just to make money for making money sake, and you're making a lot of money, you're supporting whatever you need to support, and you're still working more hours at the office, so you're getting even more, you're getting partners so that you're getting in the partner in that law firm, so that you're in even that higher earnings bracket, the income bracket. Why? Because kafa, because that's going to make me happy. That's where the verse says you've missed your priorities. You're a little bit off track. You're a lot of bit off track. You got to reset your priorities. So if, obviously this is good to talk about, it's a nice idea, but if you're using this lens to guide your decisions, you're going to have questions. Let's say we might have, like we said, buying that new car, that $250,000 Mercedes that we apparently passed in Poland. I thought that was crazy, but a couple of guys were like, yeah, no, literally, that's how much that car costs. I'm like, but it's just a car. They're like, yeah, Mercedes, you gotta pay top dollar. So can you really justify, if you're ascribing to this idea of money as a means to an end, can you really justify buying that car over, I don't know, $10,000 car, if that's a more normal price? Can you justify that $500 suit? Is that really worth your investment? Or is the money that you're claiming is just a means to an end and not an end to itself? Is there a better way to spend that money? Again, that's a goal to aspire to. It's tough, but with this perspective in mind, it changed a little bit of our perspective on, number one, what we're doing here, and number two, how we're spending the money that we've really been given. Okay, so with this idea, we now have two criteria for success. If you ask somebody, have you been successful in life? The verse says you can measure that based on what we've been saying in one of two ways. Either you can look at the deeds, the actions that they've taken over the course of their life, and there's a very objective scale. Have they done positive things, or have they done negative things? Those are usually pretty easy to measure. If they built hospitals, then great, you did good. If they murdered people, really sorry, you did really bad, you messed up. That's one scale. The other scale, which is a much, much more difficult, is basically only available to Hashem. The question is, are you using your potential in the most ideal way possible? You have some guys who are born into a family where they're comfortable, they have no need to make money, there's no need to, he's a smart guy, he's intellectually gifted. His potential is going to be, let's say, like way up here, hands all the way up. But you have another guy who's let's say, born into a poor family, doesn't even get a chance to go to school, not intellectually gifted at all, he has zero opportunities available to him. For that guy, what his potential is, what his potential contribution to the world, is obviously so much lower practically than the first guy. But in terms of his own personal His own personal barometer, his own personal measure of how much he was able to contribute, what did he live a successful life, that's going to be based on what did he have available and did he actualize that. So for him, that could be, I don't know, smiling at people as he passes by. That's the most success that he could have made. And someone's going to say, you know what, you had a great life, you were super successful, let's bump you up to the top ranks of Gan Eden. He didn't really do anything practically. There's no buildings, there's no bucket measures for this guy's name on it. He didn't do anything impactful in that way, according to the first measure of success, but according to the second measure, taking what he was given and actualizing the potential that he was meant to actualize, this guy could theoretically could check out at the highest levels possible. Right? You have your first guy who's rolling in dough, went to all the best schools, whatever it is. He could build 10 hospitals, he could just start a whole new community and bring in, I don't know, the entire North America and have him make Aliyah. And if he could have done so much more than that, if he had the theoretical potential to do that plus 10 times more than that, and that's all he did, whatever he could accomplish, on the one scale, obviously, it'd be great, but on the important scale, the more fundamental scale of did you actualize your potential, you never really know how Hashem's gonna look at you, right? There's a story with the Nitziv, foreign life we talked about. I thought I was going to get to Shemayim, that was what he was scared about. I was going to get to Shemayim, and they were going to ask me, where's your Hey McDover and your Hey McShela? And your, what's it called, all your storm. He's going to say, what are you talking about? I'm here with my really nice shoes. I was a great shoemaker, and I was honest, and I did a really good job. Look at these leather boots. And Hashem's going to say, I'm really sorry, but they're great boots. But you failed yourself. You failed. You're supposed to become a huge Tom Chacham. Now, this idea of recognizing what your potential is and measuring yourself based on that barometer. So mankind, and every single individual human, is given potential, is given means to work with towards his end, and he's judged as to whether he actualized his potential. There's a nice, again, a nice quote from this letter. Whoever in his lifetime fulfilled the will of God toward the creatures brought into his orbit, right, this is all creatures, human, non-human, doesn't matter, if he fulfilled the will of God toward all creatures brought into his orbit, wronging none, that's the Sur Meirah, assisting each one to the best of his ability to reach the goal that God intended for it, that the Aseh Tov, doing his best to help each creature play the role it was supposed to play, he was truly a man. He expressed love and justice in his life. Chesed and Gvura, you could say, he expressed love and justice in his life. Here's the kicker, here's a fantastic line towards the end of the letter, I love this one. Go to, my Benjamin, right, this is Naphtali, the religious friend speaking to his friend Benjamin, who's not necessarily super religious, and the letters are written as a dialogue. Go to, my Benjamin, and examine yourself in comparison with a grass blade, a blade of grass, or a rolling thunder peal. This is like the more flowery version of the letters. A rolling thunder peal. And if you do not, despite your wealth of property and enjoyment of inner and outer possessions, blush with shame and veil your face in the presence of the angelic grandeur of such creatures. If you don't blush with shame when you look at a blade of grass, when you hear some thunder rolling through the world, if you're not ashamed because of your selfish pettiness, when you recognize that blade of grass, as much as its contribution to the world is tiny, at least it's there on behalf of others, that thunder, at least it's there contributing to other parts of creation, other things, and you yourself are totally focused on your own needs, your own wants, that should make you blush. That should make you take a step back and say, wow, every single part of the world is contributing to something else, and look at me, I'm only focused on myself. You should be embarrassed. If you do not then rouse yourself with all your strength, with every spark of your being, to acquire for yourself such angelic power, then go and lament the degradation which the age has brought upon you. Fantastic line. Anytime you're walking outside, anytime you're walking through nature, you have the potential to jolt yourself, to reinvigorate yourself with this message of work on behalf of others. It's about what you give, not about what you take. If every single other part of creation has a role to play where it takes, but in order to give, and you're just going through life, what am I getting, what am I getting, what am I getting, and you're not giving, you're not thinking, what role do I have in the bigger scheme of things, that's a problem. And that message comes to you every single time you're confronted with nature. Beautiful idea. The last thing to really end off with is something which is That's really the end of the letter. There's an idea which refers to as more mitzad halacha, not as much mitzad the hashkaf in the letter, which we can build in for a nice practical takeaway. When we make brachos right throughout the day, there's the mitzvah, berachas avodah, berachas ananim. Whenever you have the format of a bracha, baruch atah Hashem, what are you saying? Okay, so we have a thank you from Josh. Brachas in general, thank you. It's going to be hard to say that for shadach avodah or berachas mitzvah. It could work for berachas ananim, but we're looking for something that works for all three. So what is baruch atah Hashem?
You are the source of blessing.
Source of blessing. Good. So we have the guy who says it's ridiculous to say. But why wouldn't you translate just regular? Baruch, blessed, Atah you, are you, Hashem. Blessed are you, Hashem. Why can't you say that? All right. Why wouldn't you give a bracha to Hashem?
I mean, he has all the brachas.
He has all the brachas. He's the one who gives us the brachas. What are you telling me that I should give God a bracha? It would be like the guy, I don't know, the five-year-old who has $5 in his bank account going to Donald Trump, the president, and saying, President Trump, and saying, here, let me give you a donation to your campaign fund. And like, very nice, but I don't think I need your donation right now. I'm pretty good. I think I have it covered. What do we have to give? Blessings to God. Doesn't make any sense. So instead, the classic translation is, you are the source of all blessings. Baruch Hashem is, Hashem is the source of all good things. Then you go into whatever the bracha is. Source of all blessings, who commanded us to do mitzvah. Source of all blessings, who gave me this nice peanut butter sandwich. Source of all blessings, whatever the bracha is that he was talking about. So verse says, no, that's ridiculous. Just translate the words the way they're supposed to be translated. You can look throughout Tanakh. He quotes a couple of examples. Look throughout Tanakh. I found a nice one in the Gemara. It's an Avon Fritzon. Where we are very clearly, very obviously, there's no real way around it, we are blessing God. Ready for this one? Baruchi Nafshi Es Hashem. Can't really work out the source of all blessing in that line, can you? And it's not an entire parak of Tillit, but there's a parak where that line is recurring throughout that piece of Tillit. Baruchi Nafshi, Baruchi Nafshi, Baruchi, Baruchi, I am blessing Hashem. So what's going on? What Tobias said made a lot of sense. How can we bless God? But that seems to be the Metzias. Throughout Tanakh, throughout Brachos, we are being called on to bless God. There's a fantastic Gemara, it's Brachos Zayin Adam. It says that Rabbi Shmuel Brevelisha, he got to look up the song. It's a shout out to Shimi Steinmetz. I quote a friend of mine from Yeshiva back in the day. He's in YU now and in Masmidim. He introduced me to the song. It's fantastic. Alvin Freed. So Rabbi Shmuel Brevelisha walked into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And he says, inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Lahaktir Ketores, which is only on Yom Kippur, and he saw Akasri Kel Malach Hashem Tzavakos, Sar Hashem Tzavakos, I guess either name of a Malach or a name for Hashem. This Akasri Kel was sitting in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and this Malach, or this Malach, said to Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Elisha, Barcheni, give me a bracha. I freak out. I'm thinking, yeah, I need some prep time. I need to think about what I'm going to say. But Rabbi Shmuel has an answer. He goes into a whole bracha. It's very, very nice. But not the point for now. The point is, we have either this malach or we have a form of Hashem asking basar v'dam, asking a human to give a bracha to Hashem. So we have this bracha v'dam, we have this gemara. What's going on? So the verse says, what's the idea of a bracha? This is going to be brought into this letter, and it's going to be our practical takeaway from this year. The idea of a bracha is to wish or give success to another. Right, you're helping an old lady cross the street, and she says, oh, wow, bless you, thank you so much. What's she saying? I hope everything that you're wishing for, that you're hoping for, works out. I hope it all works out well. Which is a very nice idea. That's great when you say it to other people, bless you. But when we say it to God, what are we really doing? When we say to Hashem, Baruch Atah Hashem, we say Baruch Inashi, anything like that, we're saying, Hashem, I commit myself to furthering your goals in the world. You have ideas, you have a specific end goal for the world, you have a specific end goal for me, you have a specific end goal for the Jewish people, for my community, whatever it is. I commit myself, when I am Mevarech Hashem, I commit myself to furthering, to working on those goals and making sure I help bring those to fruition. Mitzvos are part of that. Berachos HaMitzvah. is recognizing that Hashem is the one who created this amazing world that we're a part of, and therefore I can commit myself to working on behalf of it exactly like we spoke about over the course of the past two letters. Birchas Hanen, and also the koach that you're giving me through this Hana'ah, the materials that I'm getting the Hana'ah from, are all things which I'm going to use and I commit myself to be using towards this higher purpose. Baruch Atah Hashem, Hashem, I'm committing myself towards this higher goal, to furthering your ideas, your goals in the world. So every single time you make a bracha, this is the famous Rambam in Tefillah, I think. Every single time you make a bracha, it's this idea of you're bringing the awareness of Hashem back into your life. The reverse takes it one step further. It's not only the awareness of God, it's the idea of Shivisi Hashem and Negi Summit. It's one step past that. It's the awareness of Hashem. And what does that mean for me? What should I do with my life based on that awareness? I'm working for God, right? The Blues Brothers, with Terry likes to talk about, I'm on a mission from God. That's the motivating force which can really power our entire lives. So that's, we spoke about the world, we understood how Hashem created the world. We spoke about man, we saw that man was kind of created as a step out, and he's asked to voluntarily bring himself in to that interconnected, interwoven system. The next step we need to talk about is history. How has man done over the course of time, from the beginning of time from Bereshit to where he's writing? He's gonna have a whole long development, basically, again, continuing through Bereshit, through Sefer Bereshit, to show these are the steps that we've gone through. There are some ups and some downs and some turnarounds, whatever it is. We're going to be going through that for the next letter, and finally we'll be able to get to, as part of that historical development, we'll get to the role of the Jewish people as part of the bigger picture.